Welcome to A World on Fire Season 2, and in an effort to cover some more Earth 1, Earth 2 crossovers and single issues at that, I have an issue here to talk about, and I also have one of my World on Fire Season 2 buddies with me, Ward Hill Terry. How are you, man?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
So I was always skimming through the app, and we talked about this before we start recording for a second, but I'll, let any listeners in on this. I'm always thinking teams in my brain. And then I thought, wait a minute, there's all these single character books where there were crossovers as well. And I thought, oh yeah, I have a hardcover that has Flash and there's a bunch of team ups with him and Jay Garrick and Barry Allen. So I thought there's probably other characters too. So went and looked at Green Lantern and I saw this really cool cover for Green Lantern issue number 40, cover dated October 1965. By Gil Kane and Murphy Anderson. Can't go wrong there. And I thought, let's talk about this one. So what do you think of this cover?
Oh, this is a fantastic cover. And also, I think this is a great idea of yours to explore our friends from Earth 2 and other appearances. This, I wish I had this book. This is one of the books I do want to get eventually. My collecting has really slowed down in this century. And I have long thought, if I can get back into the habit of going to the comic shop, I want to buy appearances of Earth 2. So this issue would certainly be right at the top. There's a couple of those flashes. There's at least one issue of the Atom that had both Atoms team up. I have all the JLA, JSA crossovers, except the first one, which someday maybe I'll get that. But this, what a great cover this is. It's the Earth 1 Hal Jordan Green Lantern charging at the Earth 2 Alan Scott Green Lantern. And Gil Kane has just drawn them both in dynamic poses with the Guardians behind them. And there's the Guardians are sort of behind, sitting at a big, long, curved desk, which is white. There's no color in there. So the green figures really pop right out there in the center of the image. And I also like behind the Guardians, behind the title, behind the DC bullet, there's a flag, a Green Lantern flag hanging there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's nice awesome. Yeah, that's really awesome. Yeah, this is a great cover. When I saw this cover, it just really jumped out at me. You know, with these two heroes getting ready to fight, you would think, you know, it looks like Hal's ready to punch Alan right in the face. And he says, one of the Guardians says, turn in your power ring and uniform, Hal Jordan. Alan Scott is replacing you as Green Lantern of Earth. And Hal says, that has-been's not cutting me out unless he can beat me in a power ring duel. And, you know, that doesn't, you know, I wouldn't say it's a bait and switch, but they don't really end up fighting each other because of that scenario. But we'll dive into it later. And there's a little bit of a blurb there on the bottom, isn't there? I like that, too. Hyperbole is like one of my favorite things.
It is. The both lanterns have their feet in the big box of caption. You clamored for it. So here it is. A power-packed novel co-starring the original and modern-day Green Lanterns in a fight to the finish. The secret origin of the Guardians.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
Got to be lettering by the... I just forgot his name. Irish Schnapp.
Irish Schnapp, yep.
Because he's got some letters that are all are bold. He's got a couple of different hand-drawn fonts. And the word Green Lanterns is just in green with no black outline.
And I love, even the logo on the top there, too, Green Lantern. It's kind of like a flame. I love
that. Oh, with the flames on top. I love that, too, yeah.
That's so cool. I really love that. So, yeah, let's dive into this one here. So This is, a script. John Broom, longtime, Green Lantern scripter, during the Silver Age. And then I did read quite a few... science fiction stories of his as well. I'm not sure what the title was that they were in. It was probably a reprint I got from the Bronze Age, but he did some really cool sci-fi stuff too. I remember reading of his, so definitely kudos to him. And then
yeah, and, prob- probably Strange Adventures, maybe.
Oh, yeah, probably, yeah.
Because he would have been in the Julius Schwartz stable. So whatever book Schwartz edited, Broom would have been have written for.
Mm-hmm. That's, yeah, you're probably right on the money there, because I do have some single issues of those and then reprints as well, which are fantastic, by the way. I wish they would make like an omnibus or something of those. That I love that. Love those DC sci-fi titles. I think those are just fantastic. And then we got pencils, Gil Kane, and inks, Sid Green, which again, great team there, right?
Sure is. I mean, I've always known Gil Kane. Well, when I was starting to buy comics, he was the cover man for Marvel. And I knew of his reputation that he did at DC in the 60s. But something about this issue really clicked with me, where I saw just how good he was, especially with his bodies. The figures are just wonderfully composed and drawn, even on the splash page with the Hal flying backward at us. But the fingers are all individually drawn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, his work on figures is fantastic.
And hair. Alan Scott's hair is magnificent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's incredible stuff. And I definitely, you know, Kane, for me, he definitely, I think the first time I ever saw a comic book with his work was probably Spider-Man. So, you know, same thing. Same Marvel, thing. Marvel Bronze Marvel Age. Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Yep. So, and then we have letters by Gaspar Saladino as well. That's a name that I love. It's a great name, number one. Yeah. And then he did a lot of great logos and lettering as well. So, you know, he's one of the greats too. So, yeah, it's a, you know, a really cool story here. Just on the Grand Comics database, there's just a little one-liner here. It says, Hal Jordan and Alan Scott team up to fight the Guardian's oldest adversary, Krona. And, you know, we talked for a second again before we started recording about Krona. It's one of these names where it's a huge name in DC lore as, you know, a villain. And it's somebody that I think I'd only ever seen before in the Crisis. You know, so that was, you know, the only place I'd ever think I saw this character before this story. And I really like him in this story. But, you know, I know you had, you know, read some older books with him in there as well, right?
This story for you younger fans out there, which means fans under the age of 50. You could consider this issue Crisis on Infinite Earths issue number 0. This is where it starts. This is where the whole plot of Crisis comes from. This is where Marv Wolfman got the story. The whole idea of Krona searching for the origin of the universe comes from this issue. And I had seen Krona. I did a quick search on Mike's Amazing World. Thank you, Amazing Mike, and Mike's Amazing World of Comics. Mm-hmm. There was a 3-issue miniseries in the early 1980s, 1982, Tales of the Green Lantern Corps, written by Mike Barr, drawn by Joe Staton, with all the best Green Lanterns, Hal Jordan, Cap Matui, Arcus Chumbic, all the good Lanterns, and Tomar Ray, of course, my favorite. And they fight Krona. So that's where Krona comes back, and then he comes back again in the Crisis. And that's it. These are the only times we see this character. And mm-hmm. But, you know, since Crisis, he's become... Because he is also used in the, of course, in the JLA Avengers 4-issue series.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. For sure. Yep. Because I do have issues 1, 2, and 4 of that. It's just like,
no.
Yeah, it's driving me insane. The last time I looked on eBay, issue 3 was like $40. And I was like, you know, I'm not going there.
That's the best issue.
Yeah, I'll find a beat up copy somewhere. There'll be some like grandpa somewhere that won't know what he has at like an antique shop. And I'll swindle him. But yeah, that's like, oh, man, you're killing me. But
no,
yeah,
you're going to find some kid because grandpa's a guy's my age who wanted this book back in 1981.
Yeah, and I'm just looking here too. This single issue has been reprinted like literally 7 or 8 times in different things, yes. Like omnibus editions and trades, and even at a Blue Ribbon Digest. So it's like, this is, like you said, this is a really important issue here.
It sure is.
Yeah, so why don't we jump in? Like you were saying on the splash page here, this is a really great splash page. You got the Green Lantern logo, and then I love to the right of the logo, it has a little text box, and it says co-starring the original Green Lantern in a full-length power-packed novel. And it has, like, the Green Lantern logo there with the green on the left, lantern on the right, and the actual lantern in between the words.
the original 1940s Green Lantern logo with Alan Scott's face right in the middle of the lantern.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I love that. And it shows, this is a great scene. We have the Guardians. They actually look like a bunch of little kids. And I don't mean just because they're short. I mean, like, their faces actually look childlike. They're in the background and they're seeing Alan Scott use his power ring to basically, you know, punch Hal with an energy blast and knock him backwards. And like you said, the Gil Kane artwork here is just unreal.
Yeah, it's really terrific stuff.
And I love the scroll at the bottom that says story, John Broome, and art by Gil Kane and Sid Green. That's fantastic.
It's a nice little touch.
Yeah, and there's a little bit of a, you know, a text box there to kind of, you know, give you a little a setup here. And it says Secret Origin of the Guardians. And that's something that another thing, too, that I didn't know anything about. Like, where do those guys come from? I know all about the Guardians. You know, they're these little guys, this and that, blah, blah. Where the heck did they come from? And, well, we're about to find out, aren't we?
That's right.
So, yeah, it starts out on Earth 2. And, you know, we have this is awesome. So Alan Scott's there. And, you know, he's been at his job, basically, right?
Well, no, this is a cool thing. It's sort of, they're having, he's at his job at the Gotham Broadcasting Company, but it's a party. It's a come-as-you-were party. So he's sort of recreated back. So what does it say? Now he's an executive. Mm-hmm. He's the president of Gotham Broadcasting. But 20 years ago, he was a radio announcer. 20 years ago was 1945 when this story was written.
Mm-hmm.
20 years ago, I got married. In real life, and it doesn't seem that long ago to me. The difference between 1945 and 1965 just seems a whole lot greater than the distance between 2003 and 2023.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're not kidding.
And comics really have changed so much more then than they have now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's a man and a woman in the background, and the man says, "That's Alan Scott. He's now the president of Gotham Broadcasting, but 20 years ago, he was a radio announcer. So for the party, he's playing that role again." And
there you go. It's Mr. and Mrs. Exposition right there for you.
Yeah, and the woman's dialogue is my favorite. "What a forceful-looking man. You can tell he was bound to reach the top." Forceful? I thought, wow, that's an interesting compliment there, miss.
Yeah.
Forceful-looking. I thought you were going to say handsome or, you know, whatever. But, yeah, forceful. Okay, and then we got another person here that's part of Alan Scott's, history, right?
Yeah, good old Doibie Dickles.
Mm-hmm. And he, you know, Alan's just like, kind of like, you know, I need to get out of here. He's like, after the party breaks up, he, jumps in the car and the two of them are flying down the roadway. But then they hear over the radio that there's a sizable meteor. And it's, you know, headed towards Gotham City. And then that did click with me, too. I thought, oh, yeah. I thought, what do you mean Gotham? But I thought, oh, yeah, that's where he was, too.
So, yeah. So, you know what? Let me just take a quick look here. Mm-hmm. Green Lantern of Earth 2 has only been seen in the Justice League Justice Society team-ups. So this is the first time we are seeing him.
Mm-hmm. In this book,
and as Alan Scott.
Mm-hmm.
So John Broome here has done a little tip of the doibie to the 1940s comics by including Doibie Dickles and, you know, sort of setting it up as like it was back then. Mm-hmm. Because I know in the 50s that Doibie Dickles went off and put this. Did he become a space cabbie or something similar to space? He went off with the space princess or something weird.
Something weird, yeah.
Yeah. So he's dressed like he used to be dressed in the comics back then.
Mm-hmm. And oh, I love how.
And that's something we remember from All-Star Squadron, right?
Mm-hmm.
Dickles was sergeant and Alan was a private and they're the same unit.
In the army, yep.
So, yes. And I don't know if that's an original thing or something from All-Star Squadron itself.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that was, like you said, an original thing or a Roy thing. But, yeah, that's where I know him from. And I love on page 3 here how he gets changed right in the back of the car. And he goes jumping right out of the car. Boy, that panel at the top of page 3, you know, again, Gil Kane, the figure work, this pose as he's, like, flying. Oh, wow, how great does that look?
And the color.
Mm.
I know this uniform, this Green Lantern costume gets a lot of teasing because it's so bizarre.
Oh, I love it.
I love it too. I absolutely love it. This is one of the first superheroes I read about in the Jules Feiffer book, the comic book heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's great. It just looks so awesome. And the way the inside of the cloak is covered a light green, his legs are dark or Kelly green.
Mm-hmm.
And the outside of the cloak is that purple color. So it's the purple, a light green, the red, the darker green, the yellow on the stripes, the yellow, two stripes on the boots. Who else has two stripes on their boots? No one. No one has two stripes in their boots. That's why Alan Scott is so awesome. He has two stripes.
Yeah. And then this is something interesting. You know, it doesn't seem like anything important happens here, but he uses his ring to try to stop this. You know, they say it's a meteor, but it really is just almost drawn like this pink, you know, beam of light.
Yeah.
And he tries to use his ring to stop it, and it goes right through his ring. And he thinks to himself, yeah, it blasted right through my beam and vanished. And then Doibie runs the car into a tree. This fantastic.
As we're going to find out, this whole story is just everything is set up because it has to happen that way.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not slowing down. We meet our characters, we see where we are, and bam, let's go right into the action.
Yep. And then he picks up the car with his power ring, which is awesome too. Again, on the next page are really fantastic. And you know, he kind of says, you know, the tree was deflected by my ring. Didn't you see it? And he goes, impossible, Lantern.
Lantern, like how he Lantern.
Yep, he has that accent. I love it. But, you know, he fixes the tree there too, I guess, right, with his ring.
Well, he picks it up just to prove, because Doibie knows that his ring has no effect on wood.
Mm-hmm.
Alan showing him, not any longer, look at this. And he's picking up the pieces of a wooden fence, the planks of the fence.
Yeah, and he's like, you know, hey, something's going on here. And he goes, somehow, contact with that meteor has eliminated the weakness of my ring. It has no weakness anymore. This is too good to keep to ourselves, which I found that line funny. And then he says, I've got to tell the Green Lantern of Earth One about this. If that meteor removed the weakness of my ring, a similar meteor contact on his Earth might remove the weaknesses of his ring, which we know is anything the color yellow, right?
That's right. A necessary impurity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you write a team-up story. Get a reason for these guys to stick together and not have a fight.
Yeah, it doesn't even have to be the craziest scheme or reason in the world for them to get together. Like, they can just, you know, hey, how's it going? You know what I mean? Just go visit.
Now, tell me, Billy, if you knew there was a parallel world and you had the means to get there and you made friends on that world, wouldn't you be going there like every week?
Every other day, maybe.
Yes. That's the thing I loved about Earth One and Earth Two stories. I just thought, why aren't they just hanging around with each other? Swapping stories. Like, why do they have to only meet during a crisis of some kind or other? Or by accident? So I really love this. Hey, look what happened to my ring. I'm going to go tell my other Green Lantern pal about this.
I'd be hey, Hal, why don't you come to Earth 2 and fight my villains, and I'll come over here and fight your villains just for something different. You know what I mean? Just for kicks.
Yeah. And that bottom panel also, the it's a rectangle-shaped panel, but the lantern is drawn at it. It's really odd angle in it. I think it's terrific.
Yeah, I mean, the pencil and ink work here, like, you can see, like, the hair on his head, like, you know, each individual hair, like, at certain points.
Yes!
You can see it's like a great, great detail.
It's magnificent. And then his neck, and his gill is very important to show he's got his ring on his left hand, middle finger, the left hand. That's where Alan wore his ring. Think of the camera angle. If this was a movie, where the camera would be, how low on the ground and at an angle this is to get these guys in that perspective.
yeah, it's really neat. Like you said, it's really not your, you know, ordinary average panel. So again, kudos to the art team here.
Exactly.
And then this was interesting. So he goes to Earth One, and I did think before I even got to that next page, like, well, how does he do that? Because, you know, for the Flash, I know I've read, you know, a few of those stories where, you know, Barry, he has to go to this certain place inside this one building. This one specific location, and then vibrate, and that gets him into, you know, be able to travel to Earth 2.
Yeah,
to
from Central City to Keystone City.
Yeah, so I thought, oh, well, I wonder how a Green Lantern, and specifically Alan Scott, is going to do it. I really like that panel where it shows him traveling to the other Earth. It's kind of like Ditko-esque, isn't it?
It sure is, yeah. Soon, the Wonder Beam is cleaving the vibratory barrier between the two Earths. There you go. That's how he gets there. He has a magic ring. He can do anything he wants.
Mm-hmm. And he's thinking to himself, I always get a kick out of visiting Hal Jordan, my counterpart Green Lantern on Earth 1, but especially now when I have exciting news to tell him. And I thought, you know, I like how just something simple. There are simple things like that where you don't really see that a whole lot anymore. Just everyday simple things and simple reasons for things. Everything's got to be kind of like so, you know, it takes 15 steps for you to figure things out and everything like
yes.
that. Like, this is just something just simple, fun story here yeah. that's just getting started.
Now, the important thing about this panel, I when I was reading it, I noticed it. That is a cool looking panel. I did not think Ditko-esque, but you're absolutely right. But the those that sort of rectangular doorway shaped motif behind mm-hmm. Alan's feet is so distinctive, and it's going to become important later on in the story. Why it is so distinctive?
Yeah,
that's a nice touch too. That's why Gil Kane was so good.
Oh yeah, great. He's one of the greatest ever. Yep. And then we see Hal. He's kind of getting out of probably a Tespa plane here. Mm-hmm. And he says, I'm getting a mental message from Green Lantern of Earth 2. He's arrived here on our Earth and is waiting to see me just outside of the company area. And then we see Hal, and he gets his lantern, and he says his oath here.
Yeah,
which is fantastic. I love that. I love their oath.
It looks like he's moving real fast. It looks like his hair is flying up.
Mm-hmm.
Even, you know, a guy sticking his hand into a lantern, Gil Kane draws it so dynamically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it like you said, his hair's kind of flying up as if he's in motion. There's like no other lines or anything like that meant to show motion. Now there's like the bright light of the lantern, and it almost looks like there's like these green and black lines around. But I'm taking that to be like, you know, the whole lantern effect, and you mm-hmm. know him changing into his costume, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
one panel, it looks great.
Yeah, fantastic. So they meet up, and again. Good to see you again, Alan. Fine to see you, Hal. You know, just like these, like, two buddies getting together. And, you know, again, just to show them, like, hey, I had something happen with my ring. You know, maybe this could help you out as well. So just something to help out a buddy. It's just, it's
yeah. Perfect. That's what heroes do. I love it
too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great stuff. And he says, you know, I can, you know, now have control over things made out of wood. And he tries to do that, like, pick up a crate. And it doesn't work. And he's like,
doesn't work.
Yeah, I don't understand what's going on here. And how about that middle panel at the top of that page when it doesn't work? Like, he really looks like, you know, sad there. That's really.
Yes, he does. It looks like this green energy just sort of falling out of his ring. Two mm-hmm. little oozing rays of green. Yeah, he does. Yeah. It looks so sad.
Yeah, because, you know, not only can he.
I just noticed the first panel, he's trying to show Hal, look, I can lift a box with my ring. And his cape is flowing and flying and flapping and furling. And then the second panel, his cape is drooping, just like the ring energy in his sad little eyes.
Yeah, fantastic. Good catch there. I didn't even see that.
Well, this is the kind of thing, you know, when you're analyzing it, you catch it. When you're just reading it, when you're, you know, 10 years old,
mm-hmm.
it's, you sort of get the feeling of it.
Yeah.
The sad eyes, his posture, the lack of movement in the cape, the lack of dynamism in the poses. I mean, you don't have you're a little kid, you don't have that vocabulary to express that, but that's all the art.
Mm-hmm. And then again, there's the third panel up there where, you know, it's like a close-up on Hal, and he's got this like shock on his face, like his eyes are real wide open, even his brow is like pushing up into his forehead there. Great stuff mm-hmm. too.
Yeah, really terrific.
Yeah, and he's kind of saying like, hey, you know, something's going on here. There's a bit of a mystery. So, you know, they're going to need to figure it out. And Hal says, you know, I have a suggestion. Why not get your ring to reveal to us what really happened when it contacted that meteor? So I didn't realize that they could kind of use their power rings, like that they were recording stuff and could like kind of play it back.
Well, I've seen I've seen Hal Jordan do that with his ring a lot. The ring talks to him. But again, the ring does what it needs to do in the story, or what it doesn't do what it ought to do in the story. This happens a lot in this writing. I don't mind though; it keeps the story moving.
Yeah, absolutely. And he goes, he looks at the ring and he tells the ring, "Tell us what really happened when I tried to stop that meteor. Leave no details out." And the ring answers him and says, "To begin with, it was not a meteor." And it you know, the ring, then there's a little caption box. It says it was really a packet of pure energy that had been created 10 billion years before. I know this because my beam contacted the disembodied mind, the extraordinary mind in the energy packet, and absorbed the contents of that mind. And I'm thinking, wow, who was this? And, you know, here's where we go into, you know, basically the origin of the Guardians and of Krona here, right?
Yeah, the planet Oa. Mm-hmm. So now it's flashback time. It's more with important exposition, courtesy of the ring.
Yeah, the ring's basically taking us on a tour of, you know, Oa and how it used to be like, you know, this just a peaceful society. And, you know, they didn't need sleep or rest. They were immortal. And, you know, there was like, basically it was like a utopia, you know, right?
Yep.
For lack of a better term. And then one person came along and kind of ruined paradise. Like Krone is like the serpent here.
Yeah. Or Pandora. Yeah. I'm sure that every society has their myth of how evil came into the world. How the bad things happen. But you're right. This is parallel to, I wish I knew more other cultural origin stories, because both in the story of Eden and in Pandora, there someone was searching for knowledge, and Krona here is searching for knowledge,
And
which is the undoing of all the good stuff.
Yep, and I mean he tries to do the one thing that you know they're basically their society says you cannot do, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, which is go to, you know, he tries to use some kind of machine to go back to the beginning of time and see who the creator of, you know, everything is. And, you know, for that, he kind of gets cast out.
He does, because because of that, hatred and evil was unleashed into the universe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fantastic. And, you know, thanks a lot, Krona. You ruined it. You know, you ruined all the good stuff.
We could have a nice universe here, pal.
Yeah, if it wasn't for Krona, we'd all be, you know, immortal and never have to sleep. Man, imagine all the comics you could read if you didn't have to sleep. Oh, yeah.
I'm going to read more comics. Yes.
And then how about on page 9 here where, you know, Krona is saying, I will never cease searching, you know, for, you know, the origins, and you cannot punish me, I'm immortal. And I thought, well, no, they can't kill you, but they could punish you, dummy. That's immortal. Yeah. Doesn't mean you can't be punished. It means you can't be killed. Or they haven't found a way yet.
Reduced him to a disembodied state in a prison of energy. Through endless time, Krona will circle through the all universes. Oh, that's a nice. I didn't realize that. I read it too quickly before. Krona will circle through all universes.
Mm-hmm.
So John Broome is deliberately setting up that Krona is going to leave this universe and travel to another universe, or maybe more.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all done between panels. Panel 1, yeah. Krona is being defiant. Panel 2, he's already gone.
Yep, they've already zapped him into non-existence, so, basically. They phantom zoned him. And then I love this bye, crazy... Felicia. What's up with this crazy Green Lantern here in this bottom left-hand corner? Looks like a chicken legs, and I don't know what kind of body, and then this weird-looking head. That's one of the wildest Green Lanterns I've ever seen.
Kai Nilg. Never saw him before.
This is probably his one and only.
This is also the birthplace of other DC stories that later writers would
mine
use very well. Steve Englehart used this origin story of the Guardians with Kirby's Manhunter when he created his Manhunter story, the Justice League. The Manhunters were the blue-faced Manhunters were a creation of the Guardians before they created the Green Lantern Corps.
Yeah, the like original, their first police force.
Exactly. So it's I really like when comic writers use a source like this and add to it. And I really dislike when comic writers deny stories like this. Oh, that didn't happen that way. I changed it. That was a dream. That was a hoax. That was an imaginary tale. That never happened. But, you know, the good writers can say, can take this page, page 9, Krona is banished, and Mike Barr is going to figure out a way to bring him back after John Byrne brings him back.
Yeah.
And then Marv Wolfman's going to use this to undo a whole lot of stuff. And Engelhart uses this to further the legend and create some other things.
Mm-hmm. And then we get a shot there too. What about that panel in the bottom right hand corner where it says, also they took care of one another matter of this period? And there's a guy there and he says, radiation will ensure that none of us and no power ring force that stems from us will ever be able, as Krona tried to learn the dread secrets of our origins, it must remain forever hidden. So I thought that was interesting.
Yep. So exactly. Why didn't they do this again? Well, they all expose themselves to their equivalent of gold kryptonite, so they can't.
Mm-hmm. And then right away we switch to Hal Jordan, and he's in front of the Guardians of the Universe here. And I love how
flashback. So those Owens evolved into the current Guardians, and they all became small with the same male balding pattern.
Mm-hmm. Every one of them. Not one of them could keep their hair, and not one of them went completely bald. I love
it.
I relate to these guys. I feel them. And then there's a little note that says, still battling evil and aiding all creatures of goodwill.
Yay.
And then we see the energy prison, you know, going through the universes.
Krona, and still alive.
Everybody,
still possessed
everybody kind of
a tremendous mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everybody kind of forgot about him, I think, right?
It's been 10 billion years, man.
Even the Guardians can't remember that.
Our sun hasn't been around that long.
And then it shows how it approached the Earth. You know, Earth 2 there.
These Guardians have been busy. They're trying to, they're trying to battle evil all across the universe. They can't think about Krona all the time.
They got bigger fish to fry.
They do.
And then that brings us right up to speed, right? It shows, you know, Alan with his ring. And then that's a really cool, it's a small panel. It's a horizontal panel, but it's really cool. It shows, like, you know, the ring shooting out the beam. And then it shows Krona there. And it says, after 10 billion years, free.
Yeah. So as you flash back to that second page, third page of the story where Alan tries to stop that, what he thinks is a meteor, and really it's Krona. And that's he uses that green beam to escape his prison.
Mm-hmm. I'm waiting for the Guardians to show up and go, this is another fine mess you've gotten us into. Oh, man. So, yeah. So then that brings us right back to, you know, Hal and Alan talking. And Alan or Hal says, Alan, the first thing I'm going to
notify
the Guardians.
Oh, hold on, Billy. I want to point out. So, once Krona has got himself into the ring, he makes his escape when Alan is going between Earth 2 and Earth 1. And I mentioned before that panel with that rectangular feature, the Ditko-esque panel, we see it from a different angle. And this time we see Krona escaping from Alan's ring. But the same background as before, that distinctive background.
Yeah. Yeah, that looks great.
So even if you can't read all the words, you can sort of figure out when this happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fantastic. And he does think to himself, Krona, now that I am back in my own universe where I have regained my full power. So when he was traveling around all these other planets and universes and stuff like that, he still wasn't at full strength. But now that he's back there, he is. And because of this, you know, transference from Earth 2 to Earth 1, that's what allowed him to get out and be at full strength.
He's back in his own universe.
Which is awesome. So then, then that panel at the bottom I was saying, it's Hal says, Alan, the first thing I must do is notify the Guardians, warn them what has happened. After that, I must find Krona. And Alan says, we must find Krona. After all, I'm responsible for him being here. So, yeah, I like Alan, who's like, yeah. He's like, I want to take responsibility, right?
Yeah. No, this is we're in this together, pal. We're friends.
Mm-hmm. And great panel there at the bottom.
Yeah. I love that, too.
Really, really good with the one of the guardians, their head kind of floating in mist coming from the ring or the power battery there, the lantern.
Yeah, we don't need a panel of explanation because the guardian says we already know what you want to tell us, Green Lantern. We two listened in on the they were eavesdropping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're like spies. They're like the NSA.
And we're not gonna waste time worrying about it. Let's get to work. What do we have to do?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, you know, they talk to him and, you know, kind of concoct a little bit of a plan here, right?
Yeah. They're going to set up a temporary headquarters on come to Earth. In the meantime, what is it?
Earth is in
utmost danger. Mm-hmm. Use your ring. Do all in your power to avert disaster. I understand, says Hal. And Alice says, we understand, Hal. He starts, God, you're not a solo act in this story, pal. Two of us together.
Yeah, this is a team-up book, didn't you know?
Yeah.
And, man, you turn that next page here. Holy smokes. I love this. Like, water is kind of tough to draw. So, the water, to me, at certain points, looks more like ice than water. But, again, I always give people some slack with that because water is incredibly tough to draw. But I love how both of the Green Lanterns look as they're swooping down. And the parts of the city there on the left and right, oh, looks really good.
Yeah, it sort of is evocative of some old Japanese paintings of water. Not as good as the paintings, but it's similar to that. There's a nice coloring effect to make it look like water. Now we get to the part of the story that bothers me.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, I understand why it's here and what it's doing. And we're going to see some great action. But we're going to see some natural, well, or unnatural disasters. But it's being couched as evil. And I have a hard time with things like floods, volcanoes, earthquakes being evil.
waves of bites, evil.
Even wasps are not evil. I hate them, but they're not evil.
No, they're just doing what they do.
Yeah.
Yeah, waves of evil. I'm like,
so the river flooding a city is not evil unless Krona is making a river flood a city, and he isn't. But never mind. Okay, that's off my chest. Let's get back to the story and see what the lanterns can do to avert disaster.
Yeah, it's interesting. So we see then on the following page after that, we have Alan here, and he says, waves like enormous pincers trying to crush those people. But my beam has frozen the water into solid ice, stopped it cold. And, man, those are like a crowd of the Gilkaniest people I've ever seen.
Aren't they? Yep. You get the obligatory out the nostril shot.
Yep.
Terrified guys in ties.
Although that woman to the right, which looks like she has blue hair, by the way.
Yeah.
That almost looks, again, to reference Ditko, that almost looks like a crazy Ditko person.
Yeah, or Munch the Scream. That's it's a great image of terrified people.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden on the next panel, you have Hal, and I thought, what the heck is he creating with his power ring here? What are these supposed to be? Like, if there was no caption there, I would never guess. No, what in the world is he doing? And then why are they red, too? That was little like...
Because they're hot.
Because they're hot, okay. I'm thinking, should they be green?
They should be green.
My ring is creating huge atomic ovens inside the waves, turning the water into steam as fast as it comes up from its bed. Those people are safe for the time being. And I thought, wait a minute, you just say atomic ovens and it's near people?
Atomic ovens.
He just created mutants
here. Get the hang of that? Atomic ovens. All right, man. Let's just get on with it.
Fantastic. Yeah. And, well, now, what do you think of this next one, too? This bottom panel where the two of them come flying up towards a mountain, and the mountain's kind of like spewing out these rocks in this like funnel. That looks pretty wild.
These are great images and great ideas. So you just gotta write it.
You just gotta go with it.
Just to accept it. Yeah, the mountain is bending over. and essentially spitting up rocks.
Mm-hmm. And then
at the city, at Coast City.
And page 15, that top panel is one of my favorite panels of this whole book. We see Alan, and I love how it's, you know, an older tool and a modern tool, more modern tool for 1965.
Yes.
What about that? Speak on that.
Yeah, Alan's created a big saw, a hand saw to cut this debris. And Alan's created a huge mammoth riveting machine. But this is why you buy Green Lantern in 1965. You want to see him make cool things with his ring.
Mm-hmm.
But the bit that I really like about this panel is that Hal's thought balloon is about Alan. So Hal Jordan, Green Lantern of Earth 1, is telling us, the reader, what Alan Scott of Green Lantern of Earth 2 is doing. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Alan's thought balloon is telling us what Hal is doing.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, which is cool.
Instead of saying that, usually it's, I'm creating this device to stop the menace in this way. We have this thought balloon saying, oh, my friend is creating a device, do it that way. They're each sort of saying, that's a cool idea. I wish I had thought of that. In a sense, they're saying, thinking that.
Yeah, and then
they're not saying that's a stupid idea. They're not being snarky about it.
No. Right? No, they're buddies, you know, and they're both heroes trying to, you know, get the job done.
Yeah.
And then we have Alan. He says, we beat it. The mountain is shrinking back. And Hal says, Mother Nature is not calling it quits yet. Alan, look, that cloud. And I like how on Hal's hand there, as he's pointing, you can see his ring kind of shining there.
Yes, that's a nice touch.
Yeah, that's great.
Don't see the ring itself because the ring is pointing away from us, but the glow is there.
Mm-hmm. And then we get, you know, like a tornado, and it starts whipping around like crazy. But again, the two of them, you know, team up with, you know, both of their rings here to stop it.
In fact, every time Hal Jordan's right hand is shown,
you can see it.
There should be a glow.
Mm-hmm. On that page for sure, yeah.
I just flipped back a few pages, yeah.
Yep, it pretty much is on every one, but Alan's isn't, which I kind of think that's interesting. Oh, actually, no. Alan's, it's more subtle,
yeah.
His left hand's obstructed in that panel where they say they beat the mountain. But when you look at that other panel, there is a little shine there on his left hand. Bit.
Someone did a good job coloring, and someone did a very good job recreating the coloring on this digital edition.
Mm. And then on page 16, that is one of the most miserable, pissed off looking Guardians I've ever seen in my life. When he's kind of pay heed. I'm like, wow, look at this guy. He's pissed. He says they got their temporary HQ up to try to battle Krona, which. Yeah, that goes about over like a lead balloon.
Well, Billy, I know you haven't read a whole lot of Green Lantern comics, but you never see a smiling Guardian.
They're always pissed off.
They always look kind of down.
That's great. They never party. Yeah. I mean, maybe they need to send somebody like Snoop Dogg to Oa, and he could he can help them out. But I do
actually,
like
how, have you read the Denny O'Neil, Neil Adams stories?
Not much at all of that. Only a couple issues, yeah.
They did touch on that with one story. One Guardian went with Hal back to Earth and loosened up a little bit.
Oh, that's great. I got to read that.
And so, because of that, he lost his immortality.
Wow. Jeez. Harsh.
It's a good... But my favorite bit of it is... In a much later story that wasn't even a comic, it was in a book, an Elliot S. Magan Superman book.
Mm, yep.
Which is hands down my favorite treatment of Superman ever. Mm-hmm. I forget which book it's in. He did two stories. He did Last Son of Krypton and Miracle Monday. Mm. And in one of those books, he's visited by this same former Guardian.
Interesting.
And if you didn't read Green Lantern comics, it wouldn't make a difference. You realize this guy's just some sort of alien. But if you had read it and you got the reference, it's really a nice tip of the hat to those stories. Because the bit how Elliot introduces it, the guy walks into Clark Kent's office And he looks like an Earthman. He looks like a little Earthman. He's not blue. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But he, boy, I wish I could quote Elliot directly, but essentially he presses his hand hard on Clark's desk and removes it. And Clark looks at it and notices there are no fingerprints. And that's when he realizes that it's the former Guardian, the old timer.
Oh, that's cool.
Isn't that, I just love that bit.
Yeah, that's really neat.
But he's the only one who escaped the, well, until, never mind. After being at the 200, everything went weird.
Yeah. Well, he says, you need no longer fear the outpouring of evil. Our presence here on Earth is enough to hold check the waves of evil caused by Krona. Follow my image. It will lead you to us. And, you know, they come to this little, like, set up somewhere, and he
it's one of them, an unused courtroom in Coast City.
They're just on every corner, right?
Yeah.
And he goes, turn in your power ring and uniform, Hal Jordan. Alan Scott is replacing you as a Green Lantern of Earth. And he goes, what? He goes, I've done everything you ever asked for me. I've never shirked a duty. I've suffered and fought, and now you suddenly take away my status as Green Lantern and give it to Alan Scott. Why? And Hal's eyes, man, he looks like he's ready to bug out.
Three whys, each one gets bigger. And then story continues on following page. So this is how you end the chapter. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, the Guardians say, you're out of here.
Mm-hmm. I love it. It's a great cliffhanger. But then, you know, you go to the next page expecting it to be the courtroom, and it's not. It's Krona. I thought that's a great, great way to... Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How awesome is this page, too? Oh, man.
Krona in a cave with his new amazing machine that he... Well, he's grown. He can do anything, as we find out.
Yeah, not only that, while he was zipping around in all these different universes, he must have been stopping at all the intergalactic gyms, too, because he's jacked. He looks like Lou Ferrigno.
This is what the Guardians used to look like before they became the Guardians.
Yep, and he says about, like, you know,
He was going to the gyms, and he's going to all the Radio Shacks as well, all this equipment.
Yeah, all his diodes and everything else.
And levers and gears and stuff.
It does look
welcome
great,
to Kirby Tech. Can I take your order, please?
It's fantastic. And then he's, you know, talking about how he's still, you know, hell-bent on finding the secret origin of the Owens. And he says, you know, that he down in the corner, though, he has his hand to his head, you know, because he's pulling an Xavier here and using some kind of mental powers. And he says, but first, my mental defenses have already warned me that my enemies, the so-called Guardians, I'm like, wow, listen to him, the so-called Guardians, he's like hitting below the belt and they're not even there. They're here on this planet to carry out my scheme. I must enter their company without their suspecting my identity. So he's going to kind of go on the offensive here, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then back to Hal and Alan, and they're going to fight it out a little bit here. And I'm like, hey, wait a minute. What's going on? Nobody needs to fight here. They're going to just figure it out without fighting, which I like. That's so much better.
But wait, but the first, it's a flashback. Krona flies into Alan's ring again.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Oh,
he takes over his body.
Yeah, he like basically takes over his brain, like uses his body. And, you know, that's how we're going to get some shenanigans going forward.
This
here.
Is what the third or fourth flashback in the story. Yeah. We can't tell it linearly because there are simultaneous things happening to different people at different parts of time. For the last 10 billion years, we can get to catch up somehow.
Maybe John Broome consulted Bob Haney on this story plot.
Maybe.
You never know. But yeah, so that's what happened. Krona is now controlling Alan Scott. And of course, he and Hal then went into the, you know, the unused courtroom, but they think it's Alan, but it's really Krona. So he had the surprise on them here, got the drop on them here, and he was able to, you know, control the Guardians, which I thought, wow, holy crap. Yep. So he's controlling Alan Scott. And all the Guardians, like, wow, he's pretty powerful.
Pretty powerful.
Yeah, and
so
that's what sets off the shenanigans of, you're no longer the Green Lantern here, Hal. Turn in your ring. And he's like, no way, I'm going to fight for it. So we do actually get a fight, but it's because Krona is really in Alan Scott's body. Yep. Really good fight scene here, though, on
Gil Kane page. Action scenes. Come on, that's awesome.
Yeah, you can't go wrong here. The two of them blasting each other. And Alan, really? Yeah. you know, with Krona inside him, he gets the upper hand on him and kind of knocks him out. And I was like, wow, like, what's going to happen? How's this going to end if, you know, Hal's knocked out and he's controlling them? Like, what's going to happen here? This was like, I was really like, I don't know how this is going to work out.
Yeah, well, again, we have one of these, it has to happen because it has to happen. Using Alan Scott's ring, the Wily Krona sets up a yellow shield that protects him from his rival's beam. Mm-hmm. Well, how the hell did he make a shield yellow?
His ring's magic, this? Right?
All right, so he did that. Because mm-hmm. he has to, because that's how he can hit Hal Jordan and punch him through a wall with his power ring, and Hal can't do anything because there's a yellow shield or okay. So mm-hmm. Hal's one page, boom, Hal Jordan is down.
He's totally knocked out, and Krona thinks to himself, I'd like to destroy him utterly, but my mind force informs me it would be extremely difficult, if not impossible. Evidently, his ring automatically acts to protect him in case of mortal danger. Well, he won't bother me anymore. And he goes, and in any event, if this entire universe disintegrates due to my experiments, he'll go with it. His ring won't save him then.
Yeah. We forgot to mention that the whole point of why Krona is taking over Alan Scott's body, that's his backup plan, because the Guardians warned him 10 freaking billion years ago that if he pursued this line of inquiry into the origin of the universe, the universe mm-hmm. would be destroyed. So yeah. Krona says, well, I don't care. I'll go to Earth too. What does he care about mm-hmm. the universe? So that's why he's got Alan Scott under his control. It all makes mm-hmm. sense in a bizarre way. This reminds me of, I watched a movie last night, ostensibly based on some Agatha Christie stories.
Okay.
Although, according to the research, that the writers of the movie sort of cobbled together a couple of different stories. Mm-hmm. So you Agatha Christie purists will not like this because it doesn't quite ring true for any of them. But it's a kind of story, like many of Agatha Christie's stories. Once we start getting near the end, we have to keep backing up so we can explain what each of the suspects were and what they were doing at the time of the murder and what they were doing 25 years earlier that caused them to come to the scene of the murder. Stuff mm-hmm. like that. And that's what this story is like.
Yeah,
here's
like
our,
you said.
Here's our mystery, but oh, wait a second. We have to go way back in time to tell you about this character. Oh, and now because we introduced another character, we have to go way back in time and tell you about that character as well.
Yeah, it's like you said, it happens two or three times at least in the story. But, you know, I'll be honest, it didn't take me out of it at all. It was still, to me, just a lot of fun.
This is the really good thing about John Broome and other writers of that ilk, especially at that time. They can get this information in quickly and not waste time. And I know that the DC comics of this time get wrapped for not having a lot of characterization because they're really story heavy.
Yes.
We don't have time for Hal to moan about not getting a date with Carol in this issue. We're not worried about that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We don't care about that stuff in this issue. That's not what this issue is about. This issue is about the whole universe might be destroyed.
Yeah, there's bigger fish to fry than a date.
Yeah, we got a 10 billion year old story to tell here. Come on.
Well, it's interesting too, because then Krona is back at his crazy lab here, but you know, it basically just he used his mind to possess the mind of Alan Scott. So there's a panel at the top where we see Alan Scott, you know, his body with Krona's brain or mind consciousness in it, working the equipment. And there's Krona's body. Just yes, over there hanging out like a zombie. Well, it's fantastic. And then, of course, the Guardians, they're wise to what's going on here now. So again,
the mind of Krona has us in his thrall.
This was a big mistake. Krona then is like, oh, well, since you know it's me in here, I'll just, relinquish the body and mind of Alan Scott and go back to my own body. But he does take his power ring. Or did he make his own power ring?
I created a duplicate of Alan Scott's power ring.
Mm-hmm. Which I thought, how do you do that? Did you make the ring make another ring? Because it's magic. Can it do that?
Mental force. Aren't you paying attention, Billy? Mental force. He can create yellow shields with a green power beam with mental force.
Oh, and I forgot to mention, too, he has, like, the heavyweight wrestling championship belt around his waist, too, Corona.
He does, with a big lion head on or something. Big Jacob Marley door knocker on his belt.
The face of Vince McMahon, I guess, or something. Oh, and then he gets real cocky
here. He's a champion of all the universes, 10 billion years in a row.
Yeah, he's got the record, 10-billion-year champion. Nobody's ever, not even the Hulkster, is going to defeat that record. So, but he goes, he gets real cocky here.
Hold on a second. We're underestimating his mind powers. Not only can he possess another person's body while his body remains intact, he can transport all of these guardians at the same time and keep them essentially hostage with his mind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's pretty powerful. That's what I said.
He's very powerful.
Yeah, I didn't realize he was this, you know, like an A-lister like this. But I like how he gets really cocky here. He says, he has the ring and he's pointing it. And this is a great panel. Again, the artwork is great. And he's saying to the Guardians, "For you see, this power ring is not of this universe and will not be affected by its collapse. It will automatically bear me to safety to the universe of Earth too. Cunning, am I not?" Now, I love it.
I would argue that Krona's power ring is of this universe because he made it in this universe. Alan is still wearing his ring, which comes from Earth too.
Mm-hmm.
Krona's wearing a copy. That won't have any bearing on the denouement.
No. And then he basically, we kind of see a repeat of what he did when he got, you know, ousted from Oa 10 billion years ago. He's using, you know, this machine to, you know, look back in time to see how it all began. And that's when our buddy Hal wakes up and he kind of gets like a little bit of a message from Alan here through the ring, right?
Contacting him telepathically through the ring. Yeah.
He says to him, "Krona took over my body, and he's taken control of the Guardians, too. I've been searching for you. Listen, there's hardly any time left. I know all this, Hal, because in the disembodied state, my mind has wide telepathic powers. You must stop Krona." And I thought, I didn't realize Alan had telepathic powers. That was interesting.
Well, he's disembodied. Now, this is also a callback to the beginning of the issue, where Alan went to Earth One and contacted Hal telepathically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he did.
He's got that power with his ring. And while his body was taken over, his consciousness had to go someplace. It goes to the powerful ring, and he could hear the story. He knows what's going on.
Yeah, and then this crazy shenanigans, too, where Hal has his ring, and Alan, like his essence, goes into his ring so they can kind of like both fight him.
Yeah.
That's wild. It's a neat panel, though. It's like a genie.
It is very neat, yeah.
Although, I like the next panel even better, where Hal's flying through the city, and it looks like it's raining and storming, and there's lightning and stuff. It's really cool.
Yeah, no one drew a flying body better than Gil Kane.
Mm-hmm. And then he shows up, and here we go, right? It's on.
Yep.
But Krona gets a little too cocky here. He thinks,
I love the yellow shield.
Yeah, I'll just use a yellow shield. This, you know, idiot, he can't affect yellow. But again, he now has part of Alan in there, and that doesn't affect him and his ring, so he can blast through it and clobber him.
Nuts to yellow shield, buddy.
Mm-hmm. But Krona's no wuss. He's not going out like a punk here. So he does zap Hal, and man, that pose
with
he's in.
With a cosmic lightning bolt.
Yeah, it almost looks like he broke his back, right?
Oh, something coming from his mind, the tremendous powers. Yeah, he's knocked over. He's almost folded in half backwards.
Yeah, and then inside his brain, you have Alan saying, Hal, relax, pal. He won't yet. Listen, when I give you the signal, add your willpower to mine. Give it all you've got. So that's what he does, and he goes right in and uses the ring to kind of stop Krona from using his ring, and then, boom, hits him with a huge left uppercut, and you know, basically dazed him enough that the Guardians get free and then they take over, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But Krona's concentration broken, his omnipotent enemies, the Guardians, burst loose from thrall.
Mm-hmm.
First, destroy the diabolic device that threatened our forbidden secret. Crack. Then we deal with you, Krona. And once again, in two panels, the Guardians get rid of Krona in the same way. Yeah. They did the 10 billion years ago. So you change the energy and away you go.
Yep. And I love how, you know, all you need is those three panels to show all that and then a word in a box that says shortly.
Shortly.
And it says, we have once again reduced Krona to an energy form, but this time we have sent him off in an orbit that will never intersect any planet or star. Never again will he be able to free himself or threaten any universe. And I thought, oh, don't say never, pal. This is comic books, man.
Yeah.
But what about this last page? Really, really good last page here with just, you know, artwork and just, I love the camaraderie between these two guys.
Oh, it's terrific.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Hal says, the idea of switching power rings so that I had on the ring from your body instead of my own was an inspiration, Alan. And Alan says, yes, it gave us the advantage of surprise, Hal, when my ring's beam pierced Krona's yellow energy shield. So I'm like, oh, that's how they did it. All right, I got it.
Yeah.
I was a little slow in the uptake.
It's true teamwork there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fantastic. I love it. And then Hal says, that trick sure saved the day, but whose idea was it? Yours or mine? You know, I can't recall. And he's thinking about it. And Alan says, what difference does it make? We were both in the same brain. And he goes, so I guess we can both take the credit. And now I've got to get back to my own Earth. So long, Hal. And he just flies away.
Flies away, yeah. Bye, yep. Alan.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for the terrific teamwork.
Yeah, and then Hal just has a Green Lantern oath moment, but he says something different. But, you know, he's there with his arms out like he's, you know, flexing like I'm the man.
Yeah, just enjoy the sunshine and how beautiful everything is now that the menace is over.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I believe that this whole story was created from the cover. I think the cover came first.
Could be, yeah, absolutely.
How can we get these guys to have a fight?
Mm-hmm.
But not a real fight because they're both heroes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how can we pull a fast one here?
I think they worked backward from that because they really didn't have much of a fight.
Yep. No, it was great. I really love this. This was a lot of fun, this issue. You know, again,
it really is. Yeah.
It's not overly complicated. It's not trying to reinvent the wheel. It's just trying to entertain you. For 24 pages, and you're gonna have a good time reading this one, right?
Yeah, that's your 12 cents worth right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh my gosh, can you imagine 12 cents? Oh gosh, yeah, I can't even imagine. Like, to me, that comics, you know, again, different times, but still, it's worth, you know, many dollars, not just 12 cents. It's so much fun, and the artwork is just off the chain. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Gil Kane is so good.
So awesome.
The
texture
of things, the fabric of the cape, the thickness of their hair. My gosh.
Yeah, just every little detail.
I like that. Even how he draws the eyes in their masks. Most artists don't draw their eyeballs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, he always did. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fantastic. So, all right. Well, anything else on this one?
No, that's a fun story. I hope I can find that in a reader's copy of that. It's a reasonable price someday. You've inspired me, Billy. I'm going to get back on find time to go to some shops someplace and see if mm-hmm. some stuff. My last big buying spree was before I became a parent, so I had mm-hmm. time and a extra money.
Uh-huh.
Was picking up back issues of Legion and Justice Society. So I think I have every appearance of the Justice Society, except the very first crisis in Justice League, up through the 90s.
Oh, okay.
That's all the ones I care about.
Okay.
So now that I have all the JSA stories, I can go back and start picking up issues like this and the other Flashes I don't have, the Atom. I got to finish the Wonder Woman stories that have the Huntress backups. I don't have all of those yet. I got to see if I have all the Superman families with the Mr. and Mrs. Superman stories. Those are all Earth 2 stories I got to find.
I know those Mr. and Mrs. Superman stories are a big our buddy Mark Gray is a big fan of those.
Those are really good. They're really lots of fun.
Yeah, I have never read those either. Shame on me. All right, man. Well, I appreciate you joining me for this one. This was a lot of fun. And yeah, maybe we can, you know, poke around and see if there's, I know there's at least a couple more. When I was searching through in the Green Lanterns here, we can check out the app and, you know, talk about another one down the road.
I'd love to. Thank you so much for inviting me. This is great fun.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. So that's going to wrap us up for this one. But, you know, after you hear this one, hopefully within a couple weeks, get another one out, probably another, you know, single issue with me and, you know, either Terry or Mart or Ross, you know, doing a Flash or a Green Lantern or something like that. But yeah, that's the plan for now. Knock a few of those out. And then when we get some time, try to sit down together as a group again and, you know, do some more JSA Super Squad. And then maybe a couple of other little treats with some bigger stories down the road. But we'll keep that a secret for now.
Yeah. Super Squad.
So, all right. That's going to do it. And we will be back here in a couple of weeks.